Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So welcome back to Deliciously Stellar on the Job. Today I'm going to be talking to award-winning fashion super stylist and TV presenter Grace Woodward about the peaks and pitfalls of a career in fashion. Hello, Grace. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's an absolute pleasure. Nice to see you again.
Oh, so nice to see you. Always a pleasure, never a chore. So, to get started, Grace, yes. Do you have a shit ton of clothes?
Oh, yeah. I have two storage units, which collectively costing me right now about £400, £450 a month. Oh, my God. So, I could put, if we put that onto our mortgage, we could have like two other bedrooms, quite frankly. But that was because I had this like brilliant idea. It was a brilliant idea, I'm telling you. That after I had a baby and I had this kind of hiatus from the fashion industry, I was like, I know, I'll open a shop, which of course is like the easiest thing you could ever do. But it turns out it's really not. And my husband, who's worked in retail his whole life, was like, you do understand that retail is really hard, don't you? And I was like, no. You just make a shop, right? And you make it look really, 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 really nice. And you make it like five doors down from your house. So that's okay when you've got a screaming one-year-old. And then you just put loads of really nice stuff in it and everyone will just come. And they'll even come from London to Hertfordshire. They will, honestly, they will.
It's in Hitchin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Graceland.
Graceland. No, Graceland is now online.
Okay.
Yeah, because as much as I was dedicated to the cause of making our towns not ghost towns and going, no, this is really, really cool. I'm just going to do this amazing little nugget and, you know, it's going to work. It doesn't work. It's really, really hard.
It's really, really hard.
Yeah.
So you have storage units filled with clothes.
Filled with, one is like a shop inside a storage unit, yeah. And one is my wardrobe inside a storage unit. So yes. And also I'm a hoarder. I'm literally, when my husband made us move out of, or well, made me move out of our first flat, because I was literally like one of those Channel 4 people, like burrowing under like shoeboxes.
I'm like that. It's disgusting.
And I'm still that person. But you know what? My grandmother's like that. She like buttons, scraps of fabric, anything. Oh no, that will come in useful.
My granny used to collect the cereal packet toys that my mum and her brothers and sisters got when they were children. So I'd go into a drawer and there'd be all these sort of like plastic Native American men. And I was like, what is that? What are these? Why is there a sort of rubber tortoise in here? This is disgusting.
But also, I think deep down, we're all quite ethical. I don't think we want to put that in the earth for it to rot over 20 million years.
No.
You know, and that's why we keep them in our drawers until we can't move in our houses.
So if you've got so many clothes, how do you get dressed in the morning?
I usually pick the ones up off the floor.
Yeah.
The floor drobe.
The
floor drobe answer. Because at the moment, we actually, we live in a 15th century house and most of it's falling down. And it's like, you know, that dream where you go, I don't want to live in like a, you know, a house that's like square shaped. So we bought this house and then it's like every single month something else like falls off. So at the moment, the roof is off and the entire ceiling of my three-year-old son's roof, his bedroom is off. And they were like, honestly, love, I don't know how this stayed up. Because, you know, this, by all rights, should have fallen on your son. I was like, thanks for telling
that
me that.
That would have been really not good. But
so even more stuff is kind of in our room at the moment, including my son's bed. And so basically, I can't open the cupboard doors. So basically, yeah, I dress from the floor and the stuff that kind of gets left downstairs.
Now, because you're a stylist, do you feel pressure to look, like, on point every day?
Well, I've gone through various kind of points of insanity with this. When I was like single and I was like young and doing it, when I just left Agence Provocateur and being a stylist at that point was incredibly important to me for some reason, I was like, I lived on the said flat, which was like crawling through, you know, some sort of warren, was on New Cavendish Street on the corner of Great Titchfield Street. So that was like, you know, literally I could see Topshop from my back window, and that felt really important. And so I would be like, you know, Great Portland Street is a catwalk and it's a very important, there's lots of media people around here. And so I'd always be in heels and always be in like something sort of metallic. But stylists are always on the road and they've always got loads of bags on them and it's always really hectic. And I, you know, that's kind of how I dressed at the time. I don't know how I did it. I don't know how I walked around in 4 or 5 inch heels as a job.
Yeah, I mean, I can't walk around in them ever. I'm going to a wedding next weekend and my mum was like, if you wear trainers, God forbid. I'm like, okay, fine. Fine, I will wear heels for an hour and then I'll take them off.
I think that's quite sensible. Yeah. But sensible doesn't come into fashion. There is nothing about fashion that is sensible from beginning to end, from the way that you dress to other people's attitudes. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it is a world of extremes.
So have you always wanted to work in fashion?
I think it became the only answer to the sensibilities that I had as a kid, sort of a sort of blanket creativity. Mm-hmm. And a lust for dressing up. And what I quickly learned, well, actually it took me about 10 years, was the fashion industry is not about those things. The fashion industry is about selling clothes. There are pockets of it, especially being a stylist, an editorial stylist, which is, you know, it is about creating fantasy and fun and basically painting pictures. But the crux of it is about selling clothes. And I think there's a whole kind of fashion suffers from its own PR, really, because it's like, and everybody says to me, oh my God, your job is so glamorous. It's like, actually, it really isn't glamorous. It might seem glamorous, but what it is really hard work, very little pay, and it's very political. So you're always trying to sort of be cool. And it's like, if you're not cool, you're not in the gang. And if you're not in the gang, it's like you don't get the work. So, you know, it's kind of juggling all of those kind of things.
What's the hardest job you've ever done?
It would have to be X Factor.
Yeah.
I hate talking about X Factor. Relentlessly, people ask me about X Factor. I mean, actually, I think the further away I get from it, you know, in 20 years' time, perhaps I'll like talking about it. But it was bonkers. That's the only word that I can find to describe it. Absolute madness. And now I can kind of, you know, that Morrissey lyric, I can laugh about it now, but at the time it was terrible.
Yeah.
Which, as you can see, I'm not crying yet. I had an interview recently with the Mail and all they wanted to talk about was X Factor. And I ended up bursting into tears. And she was like, you've just told me about the horrendous things that have happened in your life, but the thing that broke the camel's back is X Factor.
I mean, I can't imagine how much pressure you must have been under. There are so many people watching and everyone is an armchair stylist. Like,
oh, yeah,
everyone.
Yeah. But not even that. It's like behind the scenes as well, everybody is a stylist. So Sunita, for example, would come up to these poor kind of rabbit in the headlights contestants being like, babe, are you sure about that? And then they'd come back to me going, Sunita says that she's not sure about that. And I'm like, who's sitting into her anyway and why is she here? She dresses in leaves. I mean, what is this madness? So, yeah, it was, there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions and the poor contestants are kind of stripped of their humanity to every degree for the nature of the show, for entertainment purposes. So, you know, they're regardless of age or family status, they are all put in a house together. You know, it's kind of like, but it is like Big Brother with singing. It's, you know, and you see them at some point going, I think they finally cracked. One of them, who will remain nameless, basically attacked my assistant with a pair of scissors.
What?
Yeah. I mean, at some point they all go mad. And TV shows tend to get like this. It's like a warp. It's like a bubble. And that's why everyone starts sleeping with each other. Because
I was about to say, surely they all get off with each other.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. And it just becomes really very weird. But because it's so important at that time, that's kind of all that exists at that time. It happens on lots and lots of productions, and like it's well known in the film industry as well. It's kind of like your production boyfriend or your production girlfriend, or people make jokes, or she's my production wife, and it's like, do you mean that? Are you actually banging her? You know.
That's right, you're married.
Yeah. So my great aunt, she was married to a Hollywood film director, and he said to her, either you travel with me absolutely everywhere we go, or you know what happens. And she was like, right, I'll take the former. So she went on absolutely every production, just so that, because all of the starlets want to sleep with the director because they think that that's going to get work. And, you know, I guess it's a given, but when you actually hear it, you're like, oh yeah, it kind of does work like that, doesn't it?
I would just find that incredibly awkward. I'd be like, oh, I've shagged my boss. What a disaster. Not like, oh, I'm gonna shag my boss, then he's going to give me a job. Like, if I shagged my boss, he would not give me a job. I know that for sure. It would just not work in my...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Favor. So did you always want to be a TV personality? Because you've done loads of stuff. You've done Britain and Ireland's Next Top Model.
Yes.
You're a judge.
Yes.
Mrs. Nasty.
Oh, well, really?
Well,
have you actually watched it?
Not for a long time.
But did you watch it?
I did, yeah. My mum and I really liked it.
Oh, okay. So, okay, fair point. I think the thing is when you've got Elle Macpherson, who's trying to be so saccharinely nice about everything, and then you've got Charlie, who's just sort of a pretty guy, and then you've got Julian, who is the acerbic gay, what do you get left with for a female casting? And so me being, hadn't done TV before and never watched Top Model or X Factor, by the way, before I willingly signed away on the contract, you sort of realise after the affair that you are being, you know, you're being cast into a role. And I came a bit unstuck because I was like, yeah, but I don't want to be that person. So can you stop trying to make me that person? So the production and me were always kind of like going backwards and forwards. So they used like the kind of stuff that seemed, you know, and also when you're editing, you can chop any words around. I could have been talking to a different girl at that time and they put it into another one. So, you know, the beauty of the edit. My only agenda with that was to go in to talk to the girls and represent the industry as it was.
Yeah.
It's a very, very, very hard industry and it's not a nice industry. And so I didn't want to go on a TV show and A, my industry go, well, that's you over. And B, not prepare these girls, because it's like a lamb to the slaughter. It's like, if they really want to do this job, that's what it's like.
Mm.
I just felt like I was giving tough love, whether that came across as probably on TV. Like, everyone's going, yeah, but she's really pretty. It's like, well, actually, supermodels, when you take their makeup off, are generally not that pretty.
Yeah.
They're astonishing looking, but they ain't pretty girls.
That is interesting. I think that they're quite sort of ethereal looking almost.
Yeah. Remember, photography, which is mostly what models do, take a 3D thing and make it 2D. So you have to have something of a bone structure, which doesn't necessarily make sense in real life when you see it, but when it just works in terms of what happens when you take photos of it. So that's why some people go, oh, you're really photogenic. Because being photogenic is different from being pretty.
So do you prefer styling celebrities or models?
That's a really good question. I don't particularly style that much anymore.
Yeah.
Mostly because I've found either styling celebrities or models, mostly models, that I have sort of crashing self-esteem issues afterwards, going, oh my God, I'm so fat and disgusting. So you have to be like a rhinoceros to get through the industry. You just have to... Or develop some very unhealthy coping mechanisms, which I'd say accounts for 75% of the industry. So there is a very different reason why you would work with either one. I love working with extremely talented people. So I would say the people that I've loved working with most are people, female performers like Feva Ray. She just uses theatre and makeup in a very different way. So she doesn't use her sexuality to sell her music, for example. And not everybody would know her, but I went to, after working with her, I went to her gig at Shepherd's Bush, and she'd used the theme that I'd done in a shoot with her, and she dressed all of the guys, the sort of, you know, theatrics on stage in the idea that I'd kind of worked on with her. And that felt to me, you know, at the end of the day, some stylists just like shopping. Some stylists are creative. I would like to think, having gone to art school, that I'm the creative part. Those sort of things are really, really important, that you're creating something that's more than the sum of its parts. So I don't believe in like going, oh, we've got a new record coming out, so let's do like something shocking. Or let's do like something like really, like wearing the trousers, for example. It's a fairly standard, shocking thing to do. So I love working with talented people. That happens moreover in fashion editorial. So when you're working with models, and obviously models, they bring your fantasies to life. As a stylist, I usually, you know, work with the photographer on the idea. I don't just like rock up on the day with a couple of dresses. It's kind of like something that you've worked for weeks towards and done, you know, oodles of research on. And so a model brings that to life, and the joy of seeing something that was in your head suddenly in front of you, like a tableau vivant, like this is, you're creating. And I think as humans, one of the things that marks us away from being chimps is that we can create, that we can move humanity forwards. And so creating ideas, creating something new, that's a part of that. And that makes, you know, that's where my brain and my fingers and everything starts to tingle, when you go, oh, wow, this is something happening here, rather than just being like, oh, let's just try out the same old stuff.
So what would you say to people who say that fashion is like fluffy and lowbrow?
Fashion is so many things. Mm. And I think there is a huge part of fashion that is fluffy and lowbrow. It depends on, you know, I've tried to navigate my career through these things. The most fluffy and lowbrow my career got was when I was doing X Factor.
Yeah.
Because it's entertainment, and that is fluff, and it is lowbrow because people want that to be. You don't want something deeply intellectual on a Saturday night. It's like, no, give me a break. But if you look at fashion designers as Rei Kawakubo from Comme des Garçons, or if you look at Yohji Yamamoto, if you look at even some of the young British designers, Molly Goddard, you know, they are truly creative, and at a higher end, they change things. They're not just dressing people. It's the sort of cultural hegemony of picking stuff up. You know, the zeitgeist of reading the zeitgeist and regurgitating. Fashion designers are like mind readers for people. And I'm not talking about the high street here, which is kind of lowbrow. But, you know, when you're looking at the higher end and you're looking at people looking at deeply intellectual ideas, they are the people who are kind of, you know, like a sponge to everything that's going on, like politics, economics, and then reacting against it. So, for example, when the world seems to be going crazy, there's like pink fluff everywhere on the catwalks. And that is because humanity can't deal with hardness all the time.
Yeah.
Because if it was like, oh, well, everything's really, really miserable, and then fashion was really miserable as well, people just throw themselves off bridges. Fashion serves a purpose to help people, in a way, express themselves, but also kind of cope with life. Yes, it's frivolous, but it doesn't mean it's stupid.
Yeah, I agree. I think that fashion's great. I think clothes are really important. I think that, yeah, no one should be judged for taking a little bit of joy in that.
You are wearing a jumper that says Wonder.
I am wearing a jumper that says Wonder on the front. It's a little bit dead.
Is it like Wonder Woman?
Yeah, I'm Wonder Woman today.
Excellent.
I was feeling a little bit tired when I woke up this morning, so I thought today...
Exactly. You wear your Wonder Woman jumper. Have you got your Wonder Woman pants on?
I'm wearing a sports bra today for comfort, which is very unfashion.
Well, actually, I don't think it is. You know, there's room for everything in fashion.
So finally, what advice would you give to someone who wants to get into styling?
Don't do it. I mean, I feel somewhat responsible because... So when I started, there were the startings of the styling industry, but you kind of wouldn't have known about it. It took me from art school, going to London College of Fashion, and then kind of learning about styling. And I didn't know what a stylist was, but as soon as I did, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. Mm. And it took me a while to become that, but it was... I feel sort of deeply responsible for making it, being a part of that wave of making it kind of a desirable job or like a kind of fantasy job, as much as being a model in the 60s and 70s and to the 80s to some extent. You know, everybody wanted to be a model. Any rich girl that you'd found on the King's Road was, you know, an aspiring model or a model. And you're just like, and it was just like a sort of fantasy job title. You get less of that these days, but you get a lot of stylists. A lot of stylists, and that, and you know, and you're like, right, well, can I see your portfolio? And you know, you see people with Instagram pages that just call themselves stylists because they style themselves, and there is a merit to that, but it's, you know, and it's the new wave of it, but to me that's not styling, that's dressing yourself up. It's just not for me. Just like, I'm just like, you know, I'm too busy trying to create stupid pictures somewhere else, like in a studio doing work. If I had assistants that looked like we were like dressed up like crazy, like Instagrammers, I'd be like, you have too much time on your hands and you're not doing your job properly. I would rather have a geek. I'd rather have five geeks working for me. I don't care what they wear. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, that's where there is a certain, what would you call it? Like circles of the fashion industry. And the people who've got to the main hub, they don't really care about what they wear on a day-to-day basis. So most stylists you'll find looking, you know, like tramps, because, or like, you know, really expensive tramps. But you know, it's that thing where it's like, well, if you're going to be in the studio and you see like if you see Sam McKnight, he's got an exhibition on at the moment at Somerset House. He's the best hairdresser in the industry. It's not about what he wears, it's about his talent. So people say when you start styling it will take you 10 years, and it does, it, but that's 10 years of being utterly skint.
Yeah.
So having, you know, it's like being in any creative industry, hanging around with people who are of your ilk. They're your gang and they're creatives with you, and you create work however you can, and then that gets you through. I think there is this thing in fashion that you have to kind of like spend loads of money, and that's obviously what the industry perpetrates. But if you go back to the raw talent of it, that being in the photo studio, you're just going to be wearing jeans and whatever on the top, and your trainers, because you need to be comfortable and warm. Because for 10 years, I was cold and skint. So, you know, it's kind of like you have to be prepared to take the gloves off and get your hands dirty. Because if it's not all about what you see in magazines, like the fashion parties and the, you know, people on Instagram and all of that. Actually, styling is really hard work. You prep for a week, you shoot for one day, and you return for a week. And everybody is like rolled up with their trolleys, doing their hair and makeup, and then they go off again on another job. But a stylist does three times the work of everybody else. So that's why I'd say to people, it's like, if you think it's a glamorous job and you're going to have fun, there are pockets of that, but you have to work really, really, really extremely hard to get to that.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Grace.
It's a total pleasure.
That's all for this week. Don't forget that you can find me on Instagram at deliciouslystella, or you can drop me an email at deliciouslystella@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
See you next time.